PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
This episode of the Off Course Podcast is brought to you by Evolve Golf. They're a company who is absolutely committed to making products that are better for the player, the course, and the planet. You've probably seen some of their divot tools, ball markers, motion wool socks, leather works, and my personal favorite, the Epoch Golf Tee. You should go over to www.evolvegolf.com and see all the fantastic products they have that you might love to incorporate into your game. Hello, you golfing legends, and welcome back to another episode of the original Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and joining me this week is Mr. Blake Calloway, founder of Astral Putters. Blake, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. We're excited to be on.
Hey, I'd love to, I know on THP we've already had a brand story. We got people talking about your product. But for those who aren't familiar, can you give us a little bit of a brief history on the brand and where you've come from?
Yeah, we'll start with where we are today, which is that kind of we have a putter that we designed to give the golfer complete control to set up the way that they want. So that goes from just looking down all the way to kind of refining a lot of different specs, lie angle, shaft offset, toe hang, as well as face insert material. So we really try to give golfers, customers, kind of the experience that they want out of it. And it can be very in-depth or it can be very superficial of just, I like the way it looks. But the process to get here has been a long one. So golf is not my main industry. I was a golfer like everybody else out here. And frankly, really frustrated with kind of the putter offerings. You know, I think I was the, I'm a equipment junkie, so I fit in very well here. I like to explore new equipment. You know, I really like to think about the different technology and how it works. And I was the guy that owned 10, 15 putters in the garage and kind of constantly looking for the thing that wasn't working, or, you know, constantly trying to find something when nothing was working. Been through it all and then kind of really started diving into the deep of kind of how putters work, kind of what are the mechanics of the swing, and then really starting to design a product to kind of satisfy a lot of kind of the holes that I personally experienced as a golfer.
Yeah, so I think it's interesting that a lot of putters out there are designed for the most common type of player. But what happens if you're not the most common type of player or the most common type of stroke? You don't really fit into the box like a lot of people do. And I definitely resonate with that as someone who requires more of a face balance blade in my preference, which isn't the easiest thing to come by. So
no, and that's certainly something that we get a lot of traction from people that I think that they're like, oh my gosh, like I want to play a blade, but I don't fit into a blade. And what I will tell you is the process of kind of learning more about putters and fitting a lot of different people is that in reality, very few people fit into a blade and very few people fit into a face balance mallet. You know, the magic's in between those two areas. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, what we like to kind of say is that we have 3-4 main putters out there. And, you know, a lot of people have gotten really good at compensating, learning how to use them. And frankly, a really good golfer can make any putter work for them. The question is just kind of like your irons, like, is there room to optimize? Is there room to improve? And what we find with most everyone that comes in is that, yes, there is room to improve upon what they're currently playing with. And that's just because what they picked up or what they've been fit into was really designed for someone else, or more importantly, just the average golfer, which, you know, biomechanics says that that's going to be a hugely variable scale of people.
Yeah. So you come up with the idea like, hey, let's find something that works for more people, or at least at the very worst, let's find something that works for me kind of thing. Right. And, you know, where does it go from there? How do you land on the technology you're using? How do you land on the shaping you decide on? What caused Astral to become Astral?
Yeah, I think kind of the inception goes back to like the aha light bulb moment for me. And so for me, you know, I was restoring old putters, but I was looking for something very specific. And that was, I wanted a blade with no offset to it that had a conventional toe hang of a blade. And that to me just did not stand out as a particularly exotic quest. That seemed very like mundane. And I went on to the marketplaces. I went, you know, eBay, went through all of everyone's current offerings. No one offered it. I mean, like, it was like a vintage putter from Scotty Cameron in the late 80s that like fit the bill. And I was like, that's just wild to me that something so mundane, so simple doesn't exist. And that kind of really like clicked to me to look around at what was being offered and really think through, like, my God, you know, we have a ton of putters on the wall, but they're really not designed to perform any different. And so to me, the question was, how do I go about giving people flexibility to adjust and try different things? And it all came down to kind of from what I had learned as I was researching, really toe hang and offset are some of the critical drivers in how your putter performs. And that, so toe hang is gonna be the balance of your putter. Most of your viewers and listeners here will agree with that. Offsets, how forward front of the face or behind the face that the shaft is relative to the face. And both of those things, I found very little variation. I mean, we had the plumber's neck type. We had starting to see some more plumber's necks that were taller and shorter, which give us a little bit of different flexibility. Offset was pretty much universally fixed at 3/4 to 1 shaft offset. And, you know, it struck me as just really, really surprising that there wasn't more versatility in that one. And so the big challenge to me was, okay, how do I create something that the golfer can actually take home and manipulate those things rather than either being fit at the store and being stuck with it or having to buy a bunch of different parts to achieve it. And so for me, that was figuring out, okay, how do I make a hosel rotate? And how can I give kind of all the different levels of adjustability that I wanted to give? And so that became kind of a brainstorming exercise. And me kind of sitting down and putting some pen to paper and then eventually starting to build out prototypes and then products.
Yeah, the funny thing to me is I think people see your putters and they have a uniqueness about them. And you the first thing you really see and really hone in on is the two-tone of the face and the flange. I think it's very easy for people to say like, that's what Astral is. But then what you don't realize, or maybe you haven't gone enough depth into, is to understand that there's actually a very significant fitting component to this that you can do on the fly for yourself, which is really, really cool. And it's all built into the hosel. So, there are some really good images out there. It kind of looks like,
I'm sitting next to one of our fit kits.
Yeah, help me out here. The inside has a bunch of different connections, so you have the ability to rotate it very subtly. I think it was like 60 different options you have from a fit perspective on the hosel.
It's gonna be hard to see here, but we have 3 different hosels, different lengths and sizes, and so they can click on and go kind of 0 offset. They're reversible, so it's probably isn't stuck in there. You can flip them so we get more settings. But so as we kind of start flipping and rotating, we really start creating a bunch of different variations on the theme of just kind of how that play performance of that characteristic is going to work. And so, yes, I think that the visual appearance of the putters, like the two-tone, I think that that's a distinctive look. It also has some performance reasons. You know, I think one of the things that we're really focusing our customers on is I need 2 things for you. I need you to be hitting the ball out of the center of the face every time. And so the two-tone of that face, when you're actually looking down at the ball, it's the top line is designed to be roughly the diameter of a ball. So kind of give you a bigger target area, something easier to see as you're making contact with the ball. And then hitting the ball in line. And so with those hosel adjustments that you're talking about, we're less concerned whether you're a heavy arc, mid arc, straight back, straight through. We're just focused on consistently, where is your face at impact? Are you consistently open when you miss? Are you consistently closed when you miss? And making subtle rotation adjustments, and then kind of the 3 hosels that we provide customers, kind of there's some length variability in there as well.
Interesting. The talk about face impact, I've always looked at it as I don't want to fight the putter on the way back and the way through. And that's something that I experienced with a traditional blade is I would fight it on the way back and I would attempt to square it up on the way through. So when I move closer to a face balance, I found that not quite there, but I found that it just didn't fight me on the way back. And I was always able to keep it on line more. How hard is it to articulate that to the folks that come in and try and get fit and understand the benefits of it?
I would say that one of the really cool things about what we do is that you actually get to see it physically happening. So, I mean, what we put people on what we call our gauntlet, but it's this little gate, 2-inch gate. So it's just roughly the width of a ball. And what that does is it gives us really small variations in your stroke. So when you're hitting it offline, are we consistently left side of that gate or right side of that gate? And so when we start making those adjustments, you know, I think people are like, oh, no, I need a blade, conventional surface blade. I'm like, well, let's see if we can improve upon it. And they start hitting it, and 99% of people that are playing blades pull the ball. I mean, it's what the putter's designed to do. And so then they're like, oh, you know, I'm not feeling all that great with it. And then all of a sudden we start making those rotation adjustments, and we start seeing that ball start steering right. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, I'm doing a lot. This is a lot easier all of a sudden. It's like, well, you're not fighting the putter, just like what you said. Hmm. And we can address that. I think something else that's a little bit different is that as we kind of change our hosels, we can change toe hang, we can change offset, we can change them both at the same time. And if someone likes the sensation of toe hang, but for example, has a tendency to pull it when they miss, or, you know, kind of that fighting forward, fighting back kind of scenario, say like, okay, well, let's leave you some toe hang, but let's go address this with offset. Let's reduce offset so we start pushing that ball right. And so kind of having the arsenal of a couple of different tricks, I think that it's pretty instructive for people to kind of sit there and actually see the ball start turning for them, and then see the overcorrection and then come back. So I would say that there's some resistance to the idea that you can be fit better than your current putter. Like, it's a really weird world that we all recognize the importance of, like, going getting fit for irons, and how there may be 25 different stiff or extra stiff shafts, but one of them's going to have way lower dispersion numbers than the others. And they're all stiff, you know, there's not any difference, but we recognize that we can get that impact out of an iron. And I think we provide that same level of kind of impact and dispersion concentration with this, but it's a very foreign concept to golfers.
Yeah. I think the other challenge is that people are so accustomed to their flaw that they mm-hmm. sort of play into it. So one of the things I'm always curious to talk to when I speak to folks who are in the experience of fitting is, you have a person who comes in and they're regularly doing something wrong, and then you put them in a condition where it feels wrong to them, but it's actually right. Do you know what I mean by that?
I know exactly what you mean. It's one of my, you know, as I said, I was a golfer with my own frustrations. One of them was going and getting fit, and there's a good amount of coaching and there's a bad amount of coaching as that fitting process is taking place. So, you know, to me, what you're talking about is an overcoaching problem, where we're going to take someone out of their comfort zone. We're going to show them that better technique can improve their performance, but they're not at the skill level or the confidence level to go out and repeat that on the course. So they're fit into a putter that works well for them while they're being coached up. And when they get to the 3-foot knee knocker, you know, with some weird break to it, they're going back to their old style. And so for us, we're very much of trying to fit golfers as to where they are. And I think the beauty of the club is that we believe practice is great. We think coaching is great. We think, you know, you should improve your actual execution, but like, let us fit you to where you are today, and let us improve that fit over time as you improve your execution on the performance side.
So there seems to be a level of encouragement to start somewhere and then slowly make your way into the best possible condition for you. And I think the hosel allows for that a lot.
Yeah, it does. And I think that what is very interesting is that really subtle changes can make a fairly significant difference. And so oftentimes, as that person's progressing to a better technique, the change is very modest. But as they're starting to improve their performance, performing their technique, that modest change really does show up very significantly on the course. Mm. And so, you know, for them, the change may be simply going from like our small hosel to the same position in our medium hosel, and that just being that subtle difference, you know, of maybe 5 to 10 degrees toe hang makes all the difference in the world in performance.
So I'm curious about that, the folks who do come in and get involved and acquire a putter and go home and play with it, how often do you get feedback from them later on, a month down the road, 6 months down the road? What does that look like, and how excited are they to share their findings with you?
So I would say that most of our golfers are getting fit either in person or virtually. I think the virtual fitting people are a little bit resistant to. It's a pretty straightforward, easy process that I think that you kind of have to have the product in your hand to see, like, oh, I just do this, and then it kind of clicks in place. I mean, honestly, all the feedback we get is that people absolutely love their putter, that they've never been more confident. I mean, you know, people for the most part are not going out and changing it. Every once in a while, I have someone come in and just say, hey, you know, I feel like I'm missing things, I'm pushing right. And it's like, okay, let's run back through the fitting again and see where you are. And hey, more importantly, like, this is where maybe a better fit for you is, but here's two options that, like, when you are out on the course and you're warming up and you're feeling that, you know, something you can come back to if you need to. You know, we don't want people changing it every time they go play. I think that that's a recipe for disaster for a lot of golfers.
Sure.
But, you know, the idea of going out and playing five rounds and saying, hey, when I'm missing, I'm pushing every time.
Okay.
You know, it's like, okay, that's a great time to come back and talk to us, because something's happening out there that we're not recreating in the studio. And that was also a big kind of pain point for me is, you know, I'm on the SAM machine. I can see all the stats. I can do all those things. I know what's perfect for me in a studio. But again, when I get on the course, I'm not playing that stroke, and I'm not playing with, you know, the SAM machine is not what's going in the hole.
Okay. I'd love to talk a little bit about Charles. It sounds like your dad has been incredibly helpful along the way. I don't get a sense that if I just backed up a CNC machine into my garage, I'd be quickly building putters. So how has that process been, and how critical has he been to your story?
Well, he's critical in really two important parts. The first part is my marriage. So when I was going through this process of getting the machine, it was like, he's like, do you really want to have it delivered to me instead of you? And I was like, yes, my marriage depends upon it. And yeah. I tested my marriage to the very limits as it was with all of the design. The uptick on learning to machine, and then certainly to machine the level of tolerances that our parts require, was really enormous. I mean, we knew it was going to be hard. We still vastly underestimated just how hard it was going to be. And so a lot of that was, you know, just basic. Can you recreate, execute a machining operation? And then it was, okay, now I have a bunch of funky angles. I have to do a bunch of odd cuts. How do you go about doing that one? So my father has been really incredible, and we have different skill sets. I'd say we both kind of have an engineering type of mind. So he was really critical in terms of, you know, I would say the constructive criticism around the product. How do we build this product? How do we do it in a recreatable way? You know, is this the best, like, kind of most efficient way to do what you're trying to do versus not? And then the second was just the sheer number of hours it took to become a competent machinist. You know, there was a weird interaction where I was doing all the programming of the machine on my end and he's running it. I think people think that that's a small thing, but in reality, you know, we're talking about trying to hold tolerances. So on our putter, or just on this putter, we have to turn it four different times, four cuts from four different angles to get it. And so to get a putter that has no machining marks on it and that actually lines up, the measurement systems of how you're measuring as you're rotating it becomes really, really critical. And that's maybe a level of detail that I don't have, that I don't know that I would have ever been able to conquer. But as he experienced it and saw it, that was kind of something that was real strength.
I love that. There are, I believe, three shapes in the line right now.
Yes.
And I think so on THP, there's always a level of discussion around recreationism. Uh-huh. You know, the lack of uniqueness, I suppose you could say, in the putter world, where, you know, everything came from something. Whereas I look at your putters and they really do have a distinct profile to them, even though they share a lot of similarities to a traditional blade or, you know, some of the different longer, your mid mallet, but it has a very astral look to it. It has something that's unique to your brand. So I'd love to know, when it came down to designing that, how careful you were to share enough similarities to make people feel like they could be comfortable straight away, and how much effort you put into creating something that was very much your own.
Yeah, I think it was kind of three parts to that one. So first and foremost, I think that this idea of an adjustable putter has been something that's tried a lot of different times in a lot of different ways. What I would say is what has come out of the process has been an alien looking putter that a lot of, I would say, very, and golfers are very particular about what they look down upon. And so I would say that if I didn't feel like the putter was an attractive looking putter and it didn't kind of fit within traditional boundaries, I felt like that was going to be a fatal flaw to the product out of the gates. So kind of where my design was is, hey, I do need to be in the realm of traditional. I need it to be looking down where someone feels confident and comfortable. I also wanted something that was going to be, you know, my unique own thing. So, I mean, you know, there was a lot of, I would say, kind of push and pull of how do I stay in a traditional boundary, but kind of take it a little bit to the edge to give it something that does stand out as something unique. The other element to it is that I have just geometry restrictions to it. So, you know, I mean, one of the things, aspects of our putters is kind of what I would say are distinctive kind of like humps on the back here. And part of that is that's about weight distribution. We're trying to really, a lot of design goes into very specifically controlling the center of gravity of the putter. That's really important for performance, the ball launch, as well as MOI. But it's also very critical to the adjustability of our face plates. I mean, we have to anchor in from behind that putter to keep those face plates in place. So there, you know, we're kind of playing with three different things, which is, I have to be, in my opinion, traditional enough that kind of any golfer can pick it up and feel comfortable looking down on it. Second, as I do want to stand out on the course, and I think kind of that two-tone face is part of that. I think that really does kind of set the putters off as a different look. And then that third element is just the constraints of it being kind of a modular built putter with those face inserts does kind of give us some limitations. So,
yeah, I think the point that you made, and I certainly read this in your brand story that was on THP, is that you were a guy who had a passion for putters. It wasn't just a, hey, I'm a guy who wants to make some money, I'm going to build a putter. It was, you clearly were a guy who liked the process and the experience. You had many of your own. So there's a level of confidence that goes into that where it's not like you're going to make a product that you can't stand to look at just because it's functional. I know it matters, but that was something that really gave me confidence to know that you went above and beyond to try and make it look like something people are willing to use.
Yeah. And it is interesting of the people that really do gravitate. I mean, one, I don't have a lot of people that dislike the looks of them. But it is very funny. Of I get kind of two polarized answers, which is like, I love it, it's a traditional blade. And then other people say, like, I love it, it's like such a unique, different blade. And I'm like, yeah. It's kind of, I mean, I actually, that makes me excited that it kind of hits both of those boxes. But it always is funny to me of like when someone starts of like the looks, and I'm like, which way are they going to take this one? Is it going to be, is it going to be an outlier look, or is it going to be a custom, you know, traditional look?
That's so funny. That pegs golfers pretty good too. We're absolutely nuts is the reality of it all. So, but the other part is you look at it certain directions. You know, I'm looking at the Augusta mallet right now, and it's like laying flat. So all you see is the sole and the big, almost like a sharp M at the top. And it definitely has its own unique look when it's sitting there. But I bet you when you put it at a dress, there's a lot more familiarity to some shapes like that.
Yeah, very much so. And I mean, I think that going back to the recreationism, I mean, there's a healthy amount of recreationism in here, what we've done. You know, I mean, I look at, you know, again, I come from the same background as you, as liking the look and performance of a blade, maybe it not being something that fits me well. And that was always something that I struggled with, which is that, you know, when I would pick out a putter that was more suitable to me, I just hated the way it looked down on it, and I like lacked confidence. Like it was just like that was like this tilt to me all the time. But you know, when I'm looking at what I think are attractive looking blades, I, you know, there's a lot of blades out there that I don't think are very attractive. There's a few that are. And so it's like, you know, you have to take some of those design notes as to the things that you think kind of stand out and also put your own spin on it.
Yeah, I'm pretty firmly in the mallet shouldn't exist camp, but for the sake of the show, we'll let it ride. I'm messing with you. I'm curious with the release and these putters that are out, does it, are you constantly looking at new shapes or potentially adjusting shapes and tweaking them to align with more of like, I'll give you the best example I can. Some folks love really sharp lines and others like really soft lines where all the edges roll really hard. Are you always looking at different ways, or are you pretty firmly in the three head camp right now?
So we're going to be looking at different things. And I think one of the kind of evolutions of our company is that, you know, I think we're trying to sell putters that last people many, many years or a lifetime, and kind of bringing out different things where if they want to upgrade and try, it's an incremental cost as opposed to a really big cost. So I think the next putter that's on our list and it's designed and it's being prototyped as we speak is a Thing style putter. You know, I think that we'll bring back and bring some different blade and mid mallet type of options. And we have the double wide now. I think, again, all these things started with like what my preference was is, you know, it's like blade was the first one that came out. I had moderate success with the double wide putters. So that was number two. I begrudgingly had to make a mallet. So that was number three. I can get back on board with a Fang probably better than I can with a mallet. So, you know, I think that we're definitely trying to do that one. I think that there is an element of our design that is, angularity is I think kind of a design element that I like, some facets and faces that you see. I mean, there's always some round edges to try to, you know, not make it, you know, sharp looking. So I think that kind of angularity is probably a feature that we will see kind of cross through. You know, I think that kind of the geometry element of all of this is like the dork in me coming out. I think it's just really cool of, you know, all the different pieces that come together and how they, you know, and even just the design on CAD of how you go about doing something. I mean, it's easy. It's much easier to design CAD when you're looking at shapes as opposed to trying to build an organic something. And so it's kind of like you have to decide which side you're starting from and then come together.
Sure. I'd love to talk about the faces a bit more, because what a wild concept that is. You have a couple pretty unique options. And, you know, I can think, I've been doing this THP community talk thing for 15 years now, and I distinctly remember the first time I debated copper as a putter on there, and it was like the opinions were wildly one-sided in just about every way. And then you have the purists on the carbon side, you have the stainless side. Like there are so many different opinions based on the metal being used. And you said, well, screw that, we'll just add a bunch of options and let people decide what sort of chaos they want to bring. I really like that.
Yeah, I think that it's, I mean, the inception of it was kind of twofold. So first was like, I was brainstorming all the different things as a golfer I'd love to be able to change. And so one thing that I just hate, and again, probably brings us back to the same blade conversation, is I hate the plastic inserts. You know, they can improve my performance. I don't know that they necessarily do. All I know is that it masks the feeling of a bad putt, and that's bad information for me. So like I want feedback. I want good information, but I, you know, and I will offend some people here. Stainless steel is a really, really bad metal. Like when you look at the metallurgical qualities of it, it's hard. It's brittle. It's like, you know, it's more expensive, but that and it not rusting are about the only two like redeeming qualities it has to like other steels. So, you know, it was like, I kind of felt like the universe just kept funneling everyone back into stainless. Bett and Artie seemed to be a group that held out for a long time making carbon steel putters, much longer than the rest of the field. And I think last year, the year before, they kind of shipped away from that entirely. But, you know, as I was going back and looking at old putters, I was playing with some of these copper, the manganese, bronze, you know, the carbon steel in particular. And I was like, Mike, I mean, these putters feel so much better, and they feel better without any face milling on them. You know, something's wrong here, that these putters kind of, and I would say these are, like, a lot of them are cast putters too. You know, I mean, they outperformed in feel, you know, they're 40-year-old putters. And so I was like, this is something that we're missing as a whole in terms of letting people pick out metals that they like the feel and performance of, audible feedback, all of those things. And then, but also, how do we give someone that maybe, again, wants or needs the feel of like that plastic insert for the softness and maybe some of the forgiveness that it gives, but then also wants some of the feedback of the metal. And so that's where kind of copper came into it. Brass, I think, has been a big time winner going back from Ting Yanzer days. And it seemed like a very easy and obvious evolution to me is to give customers that flexibility.
Well, I think the stainless story has always been the durability. People lose their minds when they treat their putter poorly and can't understand why it doesn't have any staying power or resilience. I think that's the sad reality of the putter world. And I think anyone who is truly fond of the process probably isn't super excited about the direction that's gone in. But I think it also opens a door for unique putter makers to bring back or remind people what they can love. And I think this is a really nice example of that. I'm curious to know, when it comes to these types of face inserts or face replacements, I guess you could say, how often are you looking at alternatives, some more fancy metals that you see a lot of the times, or different types of these metals?
I mean, I have a list of probably 20 different putter face inserts that, when time permits, I will make. I mean, you know, I think that, so one of the things that's unique about our face inserts is they're all weight controlled. So all these metals weigh quite a bit different. I mean, I would say that steels are, copper and brass are about one and a little bit less than 1.5 times heavier than steel. So like when I mill that face insert, I have to mill the brass and copper quite a bit thinner than I do the steel. So, you know, one of the struggles that I think, or something I think would be neat, would be honestly wood faces. So it's like, you know, I got an idea of, we need to preserve weight, so it'll have like a brass backing on it. Like there's a prototype that's in place right now for that. I think that we will do some level of plastic insert just to try it. I again, it's kind of one of the things that I have people ask for it, and I feel like I have to try to respond to consumer demand. It's goes against everything I believe in, but you know, if it's someone else's jam and they love it, I want them to have that flexibility. And I would say that's probably prevailing theme in all of what we do is we want people to have the flexibility to choose what they want and to kind of be able to pick out the putter that they want without a compromise. And so if that is the plastic, as much as that I may dislike that, you know, I got to put it out there.
That's really interesting. So you're getting a lot of feedback saying, oh, I wish you'd do this face, or why haven't you done this yet?
I would say people, for the most part, are very excited with the three faces we have. You know, it's really interesting. A lot of people come in the door and they're like, I don't know which one, I don't really care. I like the way that one looks. And then we'll kind of put three of them in there and like, oh, I hate that one and I love this one. And it's like they go from having no opinion to a very strong, like, never going to change it opinion.
Sure.
But yeah, no, I think people, one thing I get from most everyone that I meet, whether they're a customer or not, is, have you thought of this? And so, like, I'm always taking that note down in my head of, like, you know, five people have now asked me, have you thought about this? And I'm like, okay, I got to start thinking about whether that's something that I really do need to bring into the fold or not. You know, one of the other things that we're doing quite, you know, I think that for the one of the putters that I sent to the Hackers Paradise had our Damascus face insert. So we'll have some upgraded inserts as well. I have another very, very kind of, it's called Macamagane, but it's like a mixture of copper and brass and nickel. It's like a non-ferrous Damascus type product, and it's really gorgeous. They're not easy to make or cheap to make, so there's not a lot floating around in the universe. But you know, I think the idea of people being able to customize, bring some specialty to their putter, some uniqueness to it without it being like a $3,000 putter. There's a lot of, I think, flexibility for us to do that in the face insert, which is to give someone that customized feel, give them something that no one else really has, but without it being at this exorbitantly high price point.
Yeah. Well, I know that metal you're talking about. It looks absolutely wild. I think I've seen in some knives, a lot of times you'll get it similar metals discussions when you talk about super fancy knives. That's really cool. And something that I think is an interesting component where people don't have to buy a new putter to do it. They can buy a new insert and place it in the putter they already love and know that they're going to get that same kind of profile is really cool. I do want to talk a little bit about milling because it always comes back to milling. It always comes back to face design, profile, sound, things like that. Where are you on milling and how much variety potential is there there?
On mill patterns?
Yeah.
Right now we currently offer that same mill pattern. It's what we call perpendicular stepped face. So it creates loft through a series of steps, but each individual face is flat. And so what we get out of that one, and I think it's something that most anyone that's a more experienced golfer is just the roll off the ball is really incredible. There's not much skid at all. It gets rolling very quickly. And so there's a little bit of science behind how we've gone about doing it. I think at some point we'll look into trying to create some different face insert or different mill patterns. But right now we're having a lot of success with what we're doing. And so I kind of don't want to mess with it. The other thing is that we are always bumping in the boundaries of the rules of golf. And so it's not something that I've explored, but I would certainly have some concerns that if we didn't have kind of a continuous mill pattern across the face, if we had kind of two different mill patterns on the, for example, the body part versus the face insert, that we may have some compliance issues. So that's also kind of one of those things that if we start exploring it, which we're open to, but it may be a more significant change across the board, as opposed to kind of it being something that we can do individually on each face insert kind of based on the consumer's desires.
Okay. I'd love to know what sort of feedback you're getting on the higher end golfer. I know, but maybe I said that wrong. The higher skilled golfer, is there a difference between the everyday player, the average golfer shooting average scores versus the one that's very attuned to their putting stroke and has really tight expectations coming into it?
So, I mean, I would say the one thing that when you're let's say a sub 5 handicap golfer, it's really hard to go out and find strokes. And so one of the things that I think that we have the flexibility to show people is that are getting properly fit, getting something that is really unique to you and takes away those compensations really does translate to the scorecards. I mean, I would say that probably the majority of our golfers tend to be on the better golfer side of things. And it's something that I think that we have been very successful of showing people that are very attuned to it, that wow, that's something I can tell that's a different. And they have enough control over their putt. They have enough experience with their game to know just kind of like, okay, I'm hitting my line a lot more consistently than I was beforehand. And these are people that are, scratch golfers. They're very, very good. What I would say is the difference between the two of them is people's tolerance to variations in offset. So just like irons, you see better irons go from more offset to less offset as you get better. And I think a lot of that has to do with face control and, kind of shot shaping. And I would say we have a similar tendency is the better golfers tend to err to a much smaller or no offset, as opposed to a lot of offset. When we are correcting golfers that have a lot of stroke variability, offset often is a very helpful thing that we'll use, sometimes more significant than toe hang. And kind of the inverse is true for the better golfers that, taking away the offset for a lot of them and kind of tailoring toe hang based upon feel you know, like what, how do they feel like they can return that face square over and over again? That's a pretty powerful fitting tool for them.
Interesting. Are you getting a lot of engagements on tour?
We don't currently have anyone on tour using it. We have a couple putters out with folks that are exploring with it. You know, a couple people on Live that we're trying to get comfortable using it. You know, part of our trip here is to, you know, get in front of, I think, caddies and get in front of the tour trucks and show them kind of what that flexibility is. You know, I think the one thing that, you know, we like to say that we kind of build better tools to bring the tour truck to you. The way that we go about fitting and the flexibility to kind of change incrementally, I think, is a very powerful fitting tool. And I think that kind of as we're exploring these in more, you know, deeper detail with some of these professional golfers, that's something that I think that they really are resonating with, which is to say, okay, let's hold everything static. You know, if I don't like it, I can go right back to it. You know, I mean, you can bend the club a gazillion different times, but truly getting it back to the same place, the same feel, very hard. And if you're not on a tour truck that can do that right there in the moment, it's virtually impossible to actually go out and test that to say, like, one-to-one, is that better or is that worse? And with us, we can put them in it, they can explore it, we can go back, they can explore it, we can go back. I mean, like, so you can sit there where they can really start to see and feel the differences between them and say, like, you know what, actually, I don't like the way that that change feels at all. Can we do it a different way? And we have different ways to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the funny part to me is there is a subtle disconnect there, because one of the biggest benefits I see in Astral is you get the tour level experience of them having tour only proto heads changed at your leisure. So you basically have your own version of a tour only proto for you head without having to wait for the face to get welded. You know, yeah. What I mean? So that I just thought that was really interesting. You know, I think there is always a level of validation that comes with the tour, but I feel like this is an experience for more of the everyday golfer massively benefiting from it versus someone who, you know, points at a putter head and says, I want that with this very specific toe hang, and poof, in a week they have one.
Yeah. And you know, I had a really interesting conversation at this year's PGA show with a well-known club reviewer, and he was talking about telling me about he built this very specific putter for him, you know, and it was this, like, you know, it had like 4/10 of a shaft offset, you know, but you know, I mean, this guy knows what he's talking about. And he was kind of asking whether I could do that. And I was like, I don't think I can get down to, I don't think I have a 4/10 option. I have a 6/10 option, but I don't have a 4/10 option. So I was like, but let me ask you a question. And I was like, do you think you can get to a better fit having someone try to custom build that for you without having ever tried that spec? Or something where you can actually kind of modulate and change to get there? And I was like, and he's like, that's an interesting question. I was like, you know, I don't know that there's a right or a wrong here, but I would say that, you know, there's a lot of things that I've wanted to try over the years that, you know, I don't know, it could be an abysmal disaster. It would be awful, you know, but I'm interested to try it. I'm not gonna buy a putter to try it to just, you know, arbitrarily. And so it's like, sure, the ability, the flexibility to try that, I think, is something that's certainly unique. And and certainly from like the equipment junkie side of me.
Yeah. Yeah. There's also, I don't know, there's a component of how things look online versus, you know, I like to think about shaft profiles as a good example. It might say launches low, spins low, and then I get in my hands and I take one swing with it. I feel like I'm chopping wood. I can just about guarantee that isn't launching low or spinning low. So, you know, the same kind of thing with a putter design. It might seem great on paper, but how does it apply in your actual stroke is always the question. Well, you have the opportunity to prove it. And if you don't like it, switch it to something else. That's really cool.
Yeah, I think that that's certainly something that was interesting to me, of having bought so many putters to try them and them not working out. I would say that the idea of what people think is going to affect their stroke is also something that's out there. I mean, there's rules of thumb, and they're pretty accurate in terms of what, you know, They do. I meet a lot of people that are defy the conventional rule. And it's kind of like, like you could keep going and going and going and getting more and more toe hanging. You're never returning that face to close. Like, let's try something different. The like toe hang is not going to be your solution to this problem. And maybe it's completely counterintuitive, and we're going to start, taking away toe hang and toe hang and toe hang. I mean, there's been some interesting revelations over the time as to what should work and what actually does work in someone's stroke. And it's, I mean, we have so many variables going on in a putting stroke, just the biomechanics, hand high, hand low. Do you have a bad hip? Like, there's all these weird things that change your individual stroke, and sometimes the really unconventional is the solution for you that would work for nobody else.
Great. Hey, Blake, it was really fun to explore your brand today. I think what you guys have created is very, very interesting. We've seen a lot of fun conversation already on the forum about it. Is there anything you want to leave our listeners with about Astral or about potential future stuff before we wrap up today?
No, I just would thank everyone for their time today. It's been great. I mean, I think that our product's going to be for the type of golfer that wants to explore these things. And I would say that if you are interested in exploring kind of the depths, we're the right fit for you. And if we're not the right fit for you, we have a prove it to you guarantee. So it's really a no risk purchase and trial.
Wow. But tons of different combinations. You have different faces, different options for your hosel. It's an exciting thing. So if you guys are out there, at the very least, take a look at the website. It's astralputters.com. And also check out the brand story on THP if you want to read a little bit more about the history and how things are operating. If you guys are playing golf this week, have a great time. Make it count. It's almost summer here. I can't wait. We'll see you guys next week.
Now it's time to send it over to Don Brown for this week's Shaft Education, brought to you by True Temper.
Hey everybody, Don Brown, the doctor of EI, back here at Shaft University to talk to you about another Shaft question you have for us. This week's question is kind of about EI because it's about a part of golf shaft design that a lot of people don't think about, but is very important, the mandrel. What the mandrel is, it is the tool that we build the golf shaft on. What that does for how we build the golf shaft is it really defines the shape of the golf shaft, that is the geometry. Why is that important? When we talk about shaft stiffness, we're talking about EI. So you've seen that places. That is the stiffness profile. E is the material, I is the shape. So the way I like to explain this to people, if I have a 1-inch bar of steel and a 1/2-inch bar of steel, they have the same E, but a different I because their size is different. If I have a 1-inch bar of steel and a 1-inch bar of jello, their I is the same because they have the same shape, but the E is different because they are different materials. So when we have mandrels, we're using that mandrels to design the eye of the EI curve. Hope that answers your question. We'll see you next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.